And it's horrible to meet them and to know that over 100 victims could have been spared the abuse if all we needed was one adult to do the right thing.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Blumenthal. Senator Hirono.
I realize how much experiencing a type of abuse is not something that one just suffers in the moment. It carries on with them sometimes for the rest of their lives. For example, being here today is taking everything I have. My main concern is I hope I have the energy even to just walk out of here. I don't think people realize how much it affects us, how much the PTSD, how much the trauma impacts us. And for every survivor, it's different. Healing looks different for every survivor. The aftermath looks very different. For me, just to paint a picture, I used to train some days 7 hours a day when I was training for the Olympics. And processing my abuse affected me so much. And it is still something I struggle with that I can remember when I first shared my story publicly for a very, very long time. I didn't even have the energy to stand up in the shower. I would have to sit on the floor and wash my hair because standing up was too exhausting for me. I couldn't even go for a 10-minute walk outside. And this is someone I've competed in 2 Olympic Games. And there are times where I feel like I forget what I'm saying. I feel like my mind isn't working. I feel like I have no energy at all. I'm 27 years old, and my 80-year-old grandfather has more energy than I do. And I've often wondered, am I ever going to feel better? And it has affected my health. In the last couple of years, I've had to be taken in an ambulance because I pass out, and I'm so sick from just the trauma. And it might not even be after a hearing like this. It just hits me out of the blue. And so I think it's important for people to understand how much, you know, even if we're not crying, how much we are all struggling and how much survivors are suffering. Because people often say, well, why did you just come forward now? Because it's terrifying to come forward, the fear of not being believed, but also because it affects us so much, and sometimes it's impossible just to say the words out loud. And so I just want people to know, and I'm sure for a lot of us, especially myself, like this might take me months to recover. And so I just wanted to make that clear because I think it's important for people to start recognizing you may never know what someone else is going through, but for people who have been through trauma, it's really hard, and if someone's watching this that is feeling really tired, that is a survivor and doesn't know why they're having certain issues that are new, just know that that you're not alone, and I experienced the same thing, and hopefully in time we can feel better.
Thank you, Senator Booker.
Fueled by men just asking questions, but I honestly didn't know what I was walking into. They just told me I had a meeting with the FBI, didn't tell me what it was about. I was just pulled in a random, it was kind of like a hotel room, and they just started asking questions. I was never prompted.
All right, Senator Padilla.
I think I had a female agent in the room at the Olympic Training Center as well, but I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
Well, I feel like we all had the same people.
But if I recall, my direct communication was with a male FBI agent.
Right. Mm-hmm. In the room.
Okay. Senator Padilla. Yeah.
Good morning. I want to.
Thank you, Inspector General Horowitz.
Thank you, Chairman Durbin, Ranking Member Grassley, members of the committee. I also want to begin my testimony by recognizing the many courageous gymnasts who came forward to report Larry Nassar's abuses, and by thanking Ms. Biles, Ms. Maroney, Ms. Nichols, and Ms. Raisman for their compelling testimony today. These gymnasts have showed remarkable bravery in detailing the sexual assaults they endured at the very same time they were competing at the highest levels for our country. They did so with the belief that their actions would save other young women and girls from the serial abuse they endured. Sadly, as detailed in our report, the response of the FBI agents who received that information betrayed their law enforcement responsibilities and their duties to these victims. Nassar's abuses could and should have been stopped sooner if appropriate action had been taken. Not only did that not occur, but after the agents' failures came to light, records were created that inaccurately described their handling of the matter and falsely summarized the testimony, as you heard, of Ms. Maroney. Further, when called to account for their actions, two of the agents lied to our OIG investigators. The OIG was able to investigate and identify these failures only because of the courage of the athletes who spoke to our investigators. What they did was extraordinarily difficult, and I want to thank them for their cooperation and strength in coming forward and speaking to us. Because of their actions, critical reforms are being undertaken to ensure that events such as these do not occur again. Let me briefly just summarize the results of our investigation. In July 2015, USA Gymnastics reported the sexual assault allegations against Nassar to the FBI's Indianapolis field office. USA Gymnastics officials described graphic information that had been provided by Ms. Maroney, Ms. Nichols, and Ms. Raceman, and informed the FBI that all three athletes were available to be interviewed. However, it wasn't until 6 weeks later, on September 2nd, that the Indianapolis office interviewed Ms. Maroney by telephone, as you heard, and neither Ms. Nichols nor Ms. Raceman were ever interviewed by that office. Moreover, the Indianapolis office did not formally document its interview of Ms. Maroney at the time or its July meeting with USA Gymnastics. The office also didn't formally open an investigation or an assessment of the matter. Immediately following that September 2nd interview, the Indianapolis office and local federal prosecutors concluded there was no venue in Indianapolis for the federal investigation. Both offices also had serious questions as to whether there was federal criminal jurisdiction as opposed to state or local jurisdiction. Yet, the Indianapolis field office didn't advise state or local authorities about the allegations and didn't take any actions to mitigate the risks to gymnasts that Nassar was continuing to treat. Further, that office failed to transfer the case to the FBI office that actually might have had venue, despite informing USA Gymnastics that it had actually done so. After 8 months of FBI inactivity, in May 2016, USA Gymnastics officials contacted the FBI's Los Angeles field office to report the same allegations that it had provided to the Indianapolis office. Following this meeting, the LA office opened a federal investigation and undertook numerous investigative steps. But critically, it didn't contact state or local authorities, and it didn't take action to mitigate the ongoing threat presented by Nassar. It wasn't until August 2016 when Michigan State University police, that police department, received a separate sexual assault complaint from another gymnast. And in September 2016, the next month, the MSU Police Department executed a court-authorized search of Nassar's residence. Among other things, they seized devices containing over 30,000 images of child pornography. According to civil court documents, approximately 70 or more young athletes were allegedly sexually abused by Nassar under the guise of medical treatment between July 2015 when the FBI first received these allegations until September 2016. We further found that when the FBI's handling of the Nassar matter came under scrutiny in 2017 and 2018, Indianapolis officials provided inaccurate information to make it appear that they had actually been diligent in their follow-up efforts and did so in part by blaming others. In addition, it resulted in the Indianapolis supervisory special agent drafting a summary of his telephonic interview of Ms. Maroney from 2015. That summary included statements, as you heard from Ms. Maroney, that didn't accurately reflect what she had told them and could have actually jeopardized the criminal investigations by including false information that could have bolstered Nassar's defense. Further, we concluded that agent made false testimony statements to the OIG in two interviews that we conducted. We also learned during our investigation that in the fall of 2015, the FBI Indianapolis Special Agent in Charge, Jay Abbott, met with USA Gymnastics President Steve Penny at a bar and discussed the potential job opportunity with the U.S. Olympic Committee. Thereafter, Abbott engaged with Penny about both his interest in the U.S. Olympic Committee job and the Nassar investigation, while at the same time participating in Nassar investigation discussions at the FBI. Abbott applied for the U.S. Olympic Committee position in 2017, but wasn't selected. We determined that Abbott's actions violated the FBI's clear conflicts of interest policy. We also found that Abbott made false statements to the OIG and my agents in two interviews that we conducted. I want to conclude my testimony where I started by recognizing the courage and bravery of the extraordinary gymnasts that we heard from today and that we've heard from and that came before law enforcement in other settings. Their persistence and strength are an example to all of us who work in the area of accountability and who want to promote accountability. Although the sexual abuses by Nassar and the appallingly inadequate response by the FBI agents cannot be undone, these athletes' commitment to justice and their pursuit of accountability for all involved in this deeply tragic series of events will improve our institutions ultimately and will help ensure federal law enforcement responds in appropriate and a timely way to reports of sexual abuse in the future. Our report recommends several important and necessary reforms. As Director Ray indicated, the FBI has begun taking them, and we will continue to conduct our independent oversight work to ensure that they're effectively implemented. Thank you, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you very much, Inspector General Horowitz.
Reporting to the headquarters unit that would, for example, put the responsibility directly on them to have notified state and local authorities.
Senator Leahy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad Ms. Howard and Director Reyes, you're here, but the conclusions we have here are, I suppose the nice way you could say is they're troubling. They're damning. They're horrible. And I think of the young women who testified here today, what they went through, and I don't see where they get much solace out of listening to this, and what do the American people feel? Senator Grassley just mentioned Mr. Howard said about Jay Abbott, named in the IG report. He retired. Was that a forced retirement?
It was not.
Did he ever face any possibility of prosecution?
We referred our findings to the department's prosecutors for consideration about the false statements that he made to us in our interviews.
By consideration, do you make a recommendation when you do that?
We don't make a formal recommendation. As you know, as a former prosecutor, and I was a former prosecutor, there are informal discussions, but ultimately the responsibility for the decision is with the prosecutors. And I will say, having written a report a couple of years ago about the prior FBI director's statements at a public press conference about what he would do as a, if he were the prosecutor, I'm not about to jump in and take someone else's responsibility.
No, I understand that. And when I was a prosecutor, law enforcement sent their investigations. I had to make the final decision, of course. But I think of the number of people who get charged for lying to FBI agents. I mean, we've seen such charges brought in various areas, everything from organized crime on. It is troubling to me to see that an FBI agent who lied, broke the law, knew he was breaking the law, and nothing happens. I understand the procedures, but it bothers me greatly. The failures by the FBI field office in Indianapolis delayed the starting investigation of Larry Nassar's widespread sexual assaults of over 100 victims. And everybody, I don't care where they are on the political spectrum, had to be torn apart listening to the testimony of these victims this morning. I know I was. And the we talked about Ms. Raisman's testimony. She didn't have a parent or lawyer present when she was being questioned. Director Ray, is that? You mentioned changes in procedures. I realize this happened before you were director, and I'm asking for the changes in procedure. Today, would she have a parent or a lawyer present with her?
Well, that would be a discussion between the agents and her parents.
The supervisory special agent in Indianapolis, Michael Angelman, has now been fired. Have there been recommendations? What took so long to fire him, I might ask?
Well, we waited for the report. You know, one of the things that I want to make sure is that we don't have a situation where two wrongs make a right. And so we waited until we had the Inspector General's independent report. We followed our disciplinary process, and he's been fired.
Did he contest the firing?
I probably can't get into that discussion here. I want to be sensitive about Privacy Act concerns and so forth.
Mr. Howard, if you can say, has there been a recommendation that he be prosecuted?
Again, what happened in these discussions generally or interactions with the prosecutors, we don't make a, generally speaking, we don't make a formal recommendation to the prosecutors. And I think you'd have to have the department's officials speak to that issue.
Okay, well, I'll just close with this. I mean, I look at a whole lot of people should be prosecuted here. Besides Nassar, obviously, should be prosecuted. But I'm thinking of some of the people within the athletic field that were aware of this, who turned a blind eye to it, who did nothing to it, and allowed all these victims to be there. I'm not talking about people in government, but even people outside. There are a whole lot of people who should be in prison. I'm glad he's in prison. But I got to tell you, frankly, as a parent, as a grandparent, there's a hell of a lot more I'd like to see in prison. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To ask unanimous consent to include in the record letters that I have sent over the last few years that show the non-responsiveness of the FBI to our inquiries on this subject.
Without objection.
And then a second one would be a little bit unrelated to this, but it deals with the unresponsiveness of Director Ray in regard to, so I hope the committee will listen to this as well. I've asked Director Ray several times to meet with me relating to a very troubling briefing that I received August 2020 from the FBI, and which was later weaponized against my and Senator Johnson's oversight. Director Ray and his staff have ignored my request to meet, mimicking the pattern here at the Nassar case non-responsiveness. So without objection, I'd like to introduce into the record of the hearing today an email thread illustrating the FBI's non-responsiveness to my request. This email shows the great length that I went to getting a meeting with Director Ray. Okay. Now my question to Director Ray. The Inspector General's report shows that Jay Abbott, a senior official in the Indianapolis field office at FBI, was allowed to retire in 2018 and evade prosecution, even though this report describes significant misconduct by him and an agent under his supervision. I've asked that the Attorney General reconsider the decision not to file charges against some of the individuals involved in the case, and I'd like you to provide this committee with a list of all disciplinary actions that took place with respect to FBI personnel who were the subject of this investigation. I believe that you owe that at the very least to the victims of today's hearing.
Well, we can provide the committee with whatever information we can. Certainly, as I've already testified here today, the special agent, the supervisory special agent who features so prominently in Inspector General Horowitz's report, I can confirm has been terminated. As to the former special agent in charge, he retired before this review commenced, before we learned the extent of his misconduct, much to my frustration. And as to the decision whether or not to prosecute either individual, I would respectfully refer over to the Justice Department, which I think is where, Senator Grassley, you said your letter was appropriately directed.
I'd like you to cooperate in assuring that the prosecution of those individuals who failed these victims, and give us your commitment that you would go to the Justice Department again to try to get that done.
Well, I'm happy to do whatever would be appropriate. In this particular case, the criminal investigation that was conducted, the case agents, as it were from Inspector General Horowitz's office, which I think is as appropriate. So that's really a discussion between his office and the Justice Department. But if I can be a constructive part of that, given how strongly I feel, as I hope the committee can tell, I'm happy to do whatever I can that would be appropriate.
Next question. Why didn't the children's unit at headquarters play a greater supervisory or coordination role here? For example, by ensuring that the correct office at FBI handled this matter, and why didn't it follow up to ensure that the Indianapolis office had referred the matter to an FBI office that had jurisdiction over these allegations?
Well, I want to be careful not to to try to paraphrase too much Inspector General Horowitz's report, since he's really the master of the facts here. But as I understand it, among the things that happened here were that the Indianapolis folks most responsible concealed information from certain people at headquarters at different stages of that's part of the problem. We have implemented changes now that go to the point that you're getting at, which is the transfers between field offices. We've built in a number of additional for additional checks that we've built in.
Was the director aware of the Nazar matter at any time in or before calendar year 2016?
I don't know the answer to that, sir, but maybe Inspector General Horowitz does.
So what happened to all the criminals? You just listened to testimony. What happened to all these people who committed crimes against these young girls beyond Dr. Larry Nassar and the FBI and the Justice Department? What happened to them? Are they going to jail? You know what you get from the Justice Department and the director of the FBI? You know what these young girls who testified, you know what they received in terms of some discount closure for the testimony yesterday? Here's what you get.
On behalf of the entire FBI, I want to begin by saying to the brave women who testified here this morning, Ms. Biles, Ms. Maroney, Ms. Nichols, and Ms. Raisman, and I gather there were some others here today who were among the many who Nassar hurt, I'm deeply and profoundly sorry to each and every one of you. I'm sorry for what you and your families have been through. I'm sorry that so many different people let you down over and over again. And I'm especially sorry that there were people at the FBI who had their own chance to stop this monster back in 2015 and failed. And that is inexcusable. It never should have happened, and we're doing everything in our power to make sure it never happens again.
And I hope that when, and I believe we will take action, that this is enough for you to put this behind you in your life, and that you could lead a life that it's just as full and happy as is possible, and that you could lead a life that it's just as full and happy as is possible.
When I was a child, I caught a fleeting glimpse out of the corner of my eye. I turned to look, but it was gone. Cannot put my finger on it now. The child is grown. The dream is gone.
Is there anyone home? Come on, come on now. I hear you feeling down. Well, I can ease your pain, get you